Hello and welcome to the Adoption and Fostering Podcast, episode number 40. I'm Scott Casanrenny, and the giggling mess in the corner yet again is...
Al Coates.
Hey,
hey. You managed it well. I did, thank you.
You just see you on the screen chuckling there.
Yeah.
It took me a little while to get that intro right because I'm still in Irish mode for
you
my holiday.
From the island. Did you have a nice time? Oh.
Do you know what? I have to say, I loved it. I caught up with two people, which you probably saw on Facebook.
I did that.
Yeah. And one of them was actually the guy who married us in 2003. Oh. And we haven't seen him for 10 years.
So you weren't going to get your money back, were you, or something?
No. Well, divorce, actually. No, we shouldn't say that. No, it was amazing. It was a really nice time. So, but yes, that is gone now. So
excellent,
you know.
Excellent. And I had a week off, coincidentally, the same week.
You did. I think you needed it as well, from the sounds of things.
Oh.
And from what you've been doing since. Leicestershire, adopt a resilience, hashtag adopt a resilience.
Hashtag I'm starting a movement. But what I've realised, yeah.
A few movements, actually, not just that one.
Yeah.
And ACEs.
I've had this... I put a little bit of it on video and I put it on Facebook and it's gone gangbusters, absolutely crazy. Really good. But what I've worried is that I might accidentally be putting lots of like personal like speakers out of business by just putting stuff on the internet. But I thought, oh, stuff it.
Well, if you've got that, do you know what? You've got the platform if you know... People need it, don't they? It's like the podcast, isn't it? We don't get anything out of this.
You don't,
that's just me having a bit of banter. And interestingly, because I've listened to loads of podcasts recently, and some of the American ones, it's really interesting because they have little breaks, don't they?
Yeah.
Every 20 minutes. And then they go, oh, tell you about this mattress or this...
Mattress?
Know.
I was going to say mattress. Who?
Yeah, that's common, isn't it? Yeah.
Totally random. Who would sponsor us?
Well, Bourbons, but there's not a brand, is there? This thing.
There must be out of copyright.
Yeah. But anyway, I was thinking that was really interesting. And you deserved your little break. Well done. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And all that. And did you enjoy your hamper from the Laughs Group?
Oh, I did, yes. Yes, it was very generous. I got,
Why do I never get stuff like that when I talk?
Because
I'm boring, obviously.
Saying nothing. I don't know. I just think they gave me a hamper. I took the hamper. It was good. And I'm still working my way through it. It was, you know, it's very good.
Was it actually part of spring harvest or something?
It did feel like that. It was really quite odd. I have to say. So I was stood at the front and then two women, one either side, almost ceremonially walked up between the pews because it was in a church. I was in a proper old pointy church. And they walked up the middle and it was like, I thought, I'm sure there's some sort of ceremony about to happen. It's like the Wicker Man. They're probably going to wrap me in something and set fire to me in the churchyard. But it was very good. I really enjoyed it. To be honest with you, it all came out of a culmination of lots of things in my life with the kids. Yeah. The kids. Mm. And I thought, you know, blimey, this stuff just goes on. It just doesn't end. And as much as we have some really positive stuff in our lives, like you, there is some stuff that I look at it and I go, this stuff is going to endure. Some of this, I am for the rest of my life going to be mopping this stuff up or responsible for this stuff. How am I going to manage that? And so I had a really existential moment in the shower. As you do. And I thought, what we need is to train adopters. We need to give them the tools to be resilient. So how do we do that? And I sat in my head, I wrote a list of four or five things. I thought, I'm going to do that. Mm-hmm. And then one thing led to another, and I'm in Leicestershire being given a Harvest Festival hamper. That's the story of my life. I had an idea, and then I'm doing a thing.
Yeah, a thing, another thing. Yeah. You like your things, don't you?
Yeah. Anyway, this has been the worst introduction we've ever had.
It's not, actually. Do you know what? I don't think it has, because you did a Twitter poll.
Yes.
About what people would like to hear, and they wanted more conversation. And now I took that to mean more conversation between you and I, because we're living it and we're kind of, we're both actually at varying points through a journey, aren't we?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've both got younger, we've both got middle, and we've both got older.
Yeah.
So I think that that's quite important. Why are you moving your National Adoption Week Awards. Are you making room for your MBA there?
I am,
we won't go there.
No, you had to mention it.
And interestingly, because my life's about to change this week as well.
Oh, what's happening? I know what's happening. That was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, you know what's happening. But I'm kind of in this, and let me try and explain it. But basically, my oldest son is moving out. Oh. He's moving into a flat with his girlfriend.
Oh.
And it's really interesting because I've had a couple of weeks to come to terms with this. And I have posted some stuff on Twitter. I've not done too much, but I have been quite honest. But it's interesting because I didn't expect to be seeing him into independence. And it's what you were saying there about there's been, you know, the long road where in my head, through the preparation of adoption, I had a couple of things that stuck in my head. And a few worries. One was when they turn around and say, "You're not my real dad." I can't honestly say that's happened. And if it has, it's kind of gone over. Well, I don't think it has. And if it has, then that just shows how much I paid attention when they said it. I was just like, whatever. I don't really care, to be honest with you. But the other thing for me was that I expected when they moved out for it not to be how it's going to be. So, you know,
that's
he's
really
local.
Vague. All right. Oh, right.
So, well, when I say that, what I mean by that is, you know, I expected it to be on bad terms. I expected them to move out on bad terms or to move out before he was 18.
In a fit of pique. To leave.
Basically. And to be fair, there's been times where it could have gone like that.
All right.
But, you know, he's 20 soon. He's moving in with his girlfriend. We're supporting him through that. Not financially, it has to be said. Grandma's doing that instead. Don't tell anybody. But it's just interesting. My perception of how this was going to go is very different to the reality.
What? In a good way, though, by the sounds of it.
Yeah, in a positive way. But I now have to get my head around this kind of the fact that one of my children is going to be living, you know, a mile away, say. We're still going to be in the same town.
Yeah.
But I have to get my head around how this is going to go because I didn't expect it to be like this.
But is it just incredibly normal? It sounds like it's appropriate.
Well, it is, yeah. And in actual fact, someone said to me at work, "What did you expect was going to happen?" And I was like, "You've got a point there."
Yeah.
But in when we, you know, when we do all our bits and the people we speak to, and I'm so used to, you know, speaking to parents who parent from a distance or who no longer have a relationship with their child or, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what comes through for me. And that's generally people's experiences. So for me, I was kind of expecting something else. So we're not there yet. But
yes, I hear what you're saying.
That's what's happening. And you must have experienced some of that in some way, shape or form. You know, you've got three older kids.
Well, yeah. But I think just peddling back one thing to what you said, is that it's really interesting because often we become focused on the negative, don't we? And I think that Twitter, and I'm more conscious of that, and this is not in any way a slight against anybody, is that Twitter is a place where is the majority of what we put on is the challenge.
Yeah.
So that makes Twitter into a safe place for a lot of people. But then it skews the view because actually that, it gives us a perception that things are going to be bad because actually for you, that's not your experience. And for me, that's not my experience with and I even said his name, my son, Ginger.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know why I haven't said his name. It's not like a secret or anything.
Does he know his name?
We haven't told him. It's a secret. Just keeping him on his toes.
Does he know he's adopted?
Well, if you're listening, if you're listening to this, just wholly appropriate. Pretty much.
But I also think that's our defence. Not defence, that's not the right word. It's our kind of barrier that we put up as well to expect the worst. So that actually, you know, if something positive happens, then, you know, that's all fabulous. But yeah, so yeah. I shall obviously keep updated.
Oh, yes. Blow by blow accounts.
Exactly.
Will you cry?
Probably.
Yeah.
Triss will be like, "Oh, get over it. Get over it. We've got a room back. I can get my train set out." That's all he keeps telling them.
It's a window into your home life that I really didn't want.
Yeah. You could just imagine him with his cap on and his little. Anyway, anyway, we interviewed Andrew Christie, didn't we, Al?
We didn't. I mean, we're going to. Say that again.
No, we did interview him because we've just done it.
All right, yeah. I'm totally confused. We're recording the. I don't know what's happening. Yeah, we've just interviewed Andrew Christie, haven't we?
It's like, you have to be professional with these things, all right? Think of it as an edit, because you're going to edit all this. You're not going to just, you know.
And I try not to.
Listen to me telling you what you're going to do with the podcast.
Get you. Yeah. How many have you edited, Scott?
Big fat zero, because I don't know how to. And
yeah,
you know,
convenient.
I'm just here for the, you know, for the looks. That's what I'm here for. So yeah.
That explains our numbers.
Yeah.
Yes, we spoke to Andrew Christie, and I have to say, it's not been without stress, has it, Scott?
No, it certainly hasn't.
And why was that, Scott?
Well, I think it's just generally because, I think it's difficult to talk to somebody who's in the role that he is as chair of the Adoption Special Guardian Leadership Board, and who potentially has a lot of influence.
Or does he, after we've just interviewed him? Anyway, that'll come out, yeah.
Yeah, this will come out in the video and in the interview. But, yeah. I
think the tension for me is that we want to... A lot of what we do is based on relationships, isn't it? So we want to precipitate change through positive relationships, through, you know, we don't have to like people, but we have to get on with them, and we have to kind of find common ground, and we have to, you know, be pragmatic at times. So we put out there, let's have a list of questions. And actually the questions that came back were all challenging questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely right.
And I think that's the most challenge that we've had actually when we've asked for questions, isn't it?
Yeah. So that put us in a sort of a position where thinking, well, actually, how Jeremy Paxman do we want to go on him?
On his ass. No.
I stopped myself from saying that.
You know me.
Yeah.
You know me.
But because you don't want to, the people you've asked in all sincerity, we've asked you a question. All right, please, you know, what you can, for them to give their questions, and then we just kind of wash them out. But so So shall we put it on and see what people think?
Pop it on, love. Press play.
Here we go. Well, hello, Andrew. Thank you very much for coming and speaking on the podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Very pleased to be here.
Oh, it's welcome. Scott and I were chatting earlier, and we've had, without doubt, some of the most passionate questions that we've ever had. So we want to forewarn you for that, really. But we can all agree that it's an issue that people are really passionate about, and so that's reflected in the questions.
Well, it's exactly what I'd expect, so yeah, it's fine.
All right, okay. So do you want to start with the question, Scott, or shall I?
No, off you go. You kick it off.
Okay.
You know you like to take charge. So.
Thank you. okay, the first question I had, which is my question really, is 18 months ago you got the job, well, maybe nearly 2 years ago you got the job of the head of the Adoption Leadership Board. How is it going? I mean, that's a really broad question, but is this what you expected it to be?
In some ways, yes, and in some ways, no. In fact, I was talking to somebody about that only earlier on today, not quite in the kind of same way as you've asked the question, but I was being asked really what were the sort of things that have perhaps been most significant in those nearly 2 years now. Actually, it's pretty much 2 years that I've been chairing the Adoption Leadership Board, of course, which is now called the Adoption and Special Guardianship Leadership Board. And I'm sure you might have some questions to ask me about that.
Yeah.
I think the most striking thing for me is that I've spent more time listening to the views and experiences of adopters, actually, Not so much special guardians, just beginning to do that,
right.
Than I've ever done before in my career. So that's the, you know, and that's over 40 years. And I think actually that has probably been, I genuinely mean this, the most thought-provoking and significant part of all of the work that I've been doing. So it's, and as a result of that, those conversations has really helped shape some of my thinking.
Right.
So probably one of the things that I'm surprised but also genuinely excited about is that my thinking has changed and broadened. So actually probably the right. thing to say about it is that it's more complicated than I thought it was when I first started.
Can I ask you a bit about that then? Because that's really interesting that you... What did you think were the primary issues, and what has that changed, or has that is it just a nuance in what's changed in your thinking?
No, my thinking has fundamentally shifted because I probably started with a view that the some of the kind of primary concerns were all about recruitment and matching. Now, those aren't unimportant issues, but actually my focus has shifted to realize actually probably more important is post-order, what happens.
Right.
And so the development of support arrangements has actually become much more significant in my thinking. And I think as a result of that, not just me, because lots of other people are also doing the same kind of thinking. And as a result of that, I think that has changed the emphasis and the priorities of the board's work.
All right, cool. Scott, do you have any questions?
Yeah, I've got two questions actually on the back of that, sorry. In terms of, you mentioned there 40-year career, and the last 2 years you've really listened to what adoptive parents have to say. What was the catalyst for that kind of, I'm not saying you didn't want to listen before, but was it kind of a directive of your role that you had to listen, or what was the catalyst for that? What changed your kind of, oh, I need to do this?
Well, I think important to understand that, you know, because as you know, but not everybody listening to this would know, before this I was a director of children's services. Mm. And I think one of the things I would say to people about the role of a director of children's services is they are having to cover so many different issues and concerns. Mm. So they would all say, I'm absolutely confident and mean it, that adoption, special guardianship, permanency are really important issues. But they are just one of many, many issues that are on their daily work program. And so just inevitably, they have less time to do some of that listening and thinking.
Mm.
And actually, maybe it's one of the things that, you know, maybe it was just something I failed to do as a director of children's services. Maybe others are much better at it than I am. But I do wonder whether or not there has been enough of a connection being made between adopters groups, adopters interest, and those involved in children's services other than the people directly involved in providing adoption services would be one of my questions going forward into the future.
It's interesting. So just on a question on from that, really, obviously you engage with adoptive parents. Do you see, I mean, the vision, the 2020 vision, includes some details around that as well. And obviously you have various avenues that you engage with adopters. How do you think that's going to look in 2020? Do you think it's going to be? Do you think there's going to be more influence from adopters around this by 2020, in terms of some of the changes and the developments?
I hope so. Yeah. One of my questions back to you guys would be: can we be confident we are as talking to as many adopter interests?
Mm.
as we should be doing.
Yeah.
So sometimes I wonder whether, you know, you two, and particularly you, Scott, are very, very involved in mobilizing Adopt a Voice, so you'd have a much better understanding of this than I do. But I just wonder, it's the known unknown, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So that would be one of my kind of questions back to you. But I do think that, well, hopefully that's one of the things that I have been able to do as chair, and I may not be chair in 2020. Who knows what will happen going forward into the future? And, you know, we all have to kind of work on the basis that these things should never be dependent upon one or two individuals.
Yeah.
So I hope very much that we will have kind of secured that commitment in the system to the views and experience of adopters themselves. And of course, the other thing we have to do is, because of the board's remit broadening, we also need to find ways and means of reaching out to people who are special guardians as well. So 2020, hopefully, we'll have also very significant input from special guardians into our work as well. And I hope, and of course, I mean, you'll know this better than I, but people when it comes to kind of consultation, engagement, discussion, the acid test is whether or not it actually makes a difference and what actually happens as a result of that. So hopefully by 2020, we can begin to demonstrate some product of that work, and adopters and perhaps thereafter special guardians will say, yeah, I can see that we've made a difference. I'm sure there'll still be plenty of dissatisfaction, but hopefully people will be able to say, yeah, we can see that actually there's been a point to this, and we've helped, been part of affecting change.
Yeah. I think that's...
One of the things,
yeah,
obviously that we know is coming up in that time, for example, is the government will be carrying out a review of their adoption support fund arrangements, because the current arrangements, you know, are just scheduled to run up until about 2020. I can't exactly remember when it ends. That's a kind of will be a crucial example of whatever is then happens thereafter, whether or not people in the adopter community will feel that the arrangements that are in place thereafter, they've had a part to play in the shaping of them.
Yeah, you've opened up a whole raft of things there that kind of links into a lot of the questions that people were really keen to ask.
Yeah.
First one was the name change. What precipitated the name change from Adoption Leadership Board to the Adoption and Special Guardian Leadership Board?
Extension of the remit to include special guardianship as well. So simple as that.
That was
no
a
more complicated.
Hey.
Yeah.
Simple as that. But that's your one pass. The rest are all difficult. which makes perfect sense, and I think it's important. But what as a board are you doing to reach out to that community? How do you? Because they're not like adopters, are they? It's a different cohort of people, demographic.
Yeah. Yeah. But they're all parents. They're all people who've got, you know, who've taken on a commitment for children. That, you know, there are commonalities,
yeah, very even much
though
so,
there,
yeah,
there are differences. And so we want to be thoughtful about both the commonalities and the unique differences. So, sorry, I'm waving my hands around. Am I in front? We've got somebody else joining in the conversation. Hi.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's kind of
slightly thrown you off,
put me
a bit
off
there.
My kind of stride.
You were talking about engagement.
Back over the question.
Yeah, you were talking about engagement with special guardians and how we do share a lot of common themes and a lot of common experiences, but we're quite different as a group of people, aren't we, potentially? Or I think we are, but you might have a different perspective on that.
Well, no, they definitely, there are very real differences. And so we're going to have to use different approaches to make sure that we hear the views of I'll get the views of involvement of special guardians as well. And so what we're doing is we are beginning to work with organisations that are representative of special guardians in particular, organisation called the Kinship Care Alliance, which brings together organisations, many of whom are either formed by special guardians or representative of their interests. And we will have we'll be adding to the board a couple of people who have kind of particular experience and remit in this area.
And that's really encouraging to know, because I think that one of the issues that I kind of pick up off the word on social media is that a sense of a lack of representation. And I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's what I'm seeing or hearing, sorry.
A lack of representation for special guardians.
Yeah, and I think potentially I hear that sometimes said about adopters. I'm not sure I agree with that, but that's what I hear. So I'm that's not my question, but that's a question that's been asked of me.
Yeah.
And do you think how effective can representation be in that context of a large, you know, it's a board that meets with a huge set, well, not huge, but a large set of people. How can adopters effectively input to that? Because I've got one of the questions was someone saying, can you invite me and can I tell you some stuff around transracial adoption? So they wanted to know how to get access to the board. I'm not sure that's a question, is it? It's more of a talking.
Well, point. No, it is a question, actually. As you know, but not all people listening will know, we've put in place a particular arrangement where we have a reference group of people who are adopters, who we talk to before, I talk to before every meeting, and one of those representatives then attends the board on behalf of the rest of the group. Now, that's only a small group of adopters. I would hope that we put a similar type of arrangement in place for special guardians.
Right.
But I recognise behind any of those small representative groups lies a vast army of adopters or special guardians.
Yeah.
And no one organisation can or should claim to be representative. So one of the things I'm quite keen to do is to actually also go out and talk to other representative groups to hear what their views are. I think the other thing is we shouldn't try and channel everything through the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board. So, for example, I hope as regional adoption agencies, just using that as an example, begin to develop that they too will provide the opportunity for adopters in their region to get involved in the kind of the work they're doing. And I've seen some of that already in some of the work that regional adoption boards have.
Do you have any leverage over that, though? Because I think often people see that, you know, your title is the head of the adoption and special guardianship. So a lot of the questions kind of reference the fact that you as that head, what leverage do you have into the each of the regions, each of the authorities to precipitate change or to say, actually, that's not good enough? Is that your role? Can you do that?
I have no direct control over anything, really. So
we should have said that at the beginning, shouldn't we?
We should, really. It carries a health warning. So I try to provide leadership. And I try to, and so what I think I have, and to be honest, what I have is only something that could be derived from the collective of the board. So it's me on behalf of the board. So I think what we have is potential influence. Right. And so what I seek to do is, just using that as an example, what I would try to do is to influence regional boards to encourage them to develop their engagement program. And I would work with others to try to achieve that kind of end. So that's just an example. Yeah. And it's probably really important that anybody listening to this understands, I'm not a manager of any people in the system. I don't control any people in the system. I don't direct any people in the system. I'm there to try to bring together and to cajole and to influence and to encourage and exhort.
And do you think that's success? Have you seen success in that? Do you feel like that's working?
It's sometimes very hard to see the progress, if any, is being made, if I'm absolutely honest. Right. But I'm absolutely convinced that we can achieve things in this way. I wouldn't be doing it otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm not the only one, I think, who thinks that we can achieve things working together.
Right. No, that's a reasonable question, because I think often people... I think a lot of the issues that I see are people, there's a slight confusion over who's responsible for what. So one of the questions that I keep coming back to is in relation to the Adoption Support Fund. And people are rightly saying, there was one question in relation to why do local authorities have to assess and then make the application, because sometimes people have very challenging relationships with local authorities.
Yeah.
And another question was, you could move 3 miles down the road and get a very different experience of the Adoption Support Fund. You might get a really clear access, a really well-defined route that gives you good, you know, very timely access to the fund. Another authority, it's taking people months and months and months. So what developments are you seeing, and what leverage are you trying to put in place to kind of smooth it out, to kind of get parity across all of the regions?
I think this is one of the really big issues, and it's right to talk about it in respect of how the Adoption Support Fund is delivered, but you could talk about it in respect of all sorts of other aspects of adoption, and indeed special guardianship, order practice and provision. That sadly there is too much variation in my view, and in the view of the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board. So that's a view shared by many others. The way that we are trying to address that, in one of the very particular ways, is by making available more information which actually sheds light on these issues. So one of the things that I do, and I go around the country and I ask questions about, is, for example, why is it in these local authorities there is a waiting time for assessments of however long it might be, whereas, as you say, in other local authorities, there is very little wait, if any, at all.
Yeah.
And I think by just making that more clear to people, what people might call transparency, I think that's one way of encouraging those who are perhaps not doing quite as well as we would want them to be, to actually raise their game. So that's one thing. I think the second thing is, then we probably need to look forward into the future, is there a different way of approaching this? Because I don't think that the current model, it's delivered a lot of support, actually. And I don't know whether you picked this up, but certainly I picked this up. Adopters do, and adoptive families do, talk about how it has made a real difference in many cases. And I absolutely accept that isn't the case for all by any manner of means. But it, as a model, it is very, it's imperfect.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that the board will be doing is hopefully influencing the government as to how they're going to shape these arrangements going forward into the future. And one of the things has got to be a more consistent, reliable approach to assessment and access to the support arrangements when it's needed. I think there'll still need to be a model which is based on some form of assessment of need, because unfortunately we're always likely to be in the business of trying to make best use of very scarce resources and making sure that those resources go around everybody who needs it. And one of the ways you do it is about making sure that the need is actually kind of the resources are targeted on those that it, you know, in kind of a fair and equitable, but also based on need basis. Does that make sense? You're looking slightly
I'm
puzzled.
No, I'm not puzzled at all. I don't know whether Scott,
I'll make a change.
Yeah, not about this. I'm not puzzled. I think the and I know that the in some ways that it's the Adoption Support Fund is linked, I'm maybe answering the question for you, is linked to the assessment
of need.
That'd
be helpful, but anyway, keep going.
Well, I think the question about why can't local independent adoption agencies make the assessment is linked to the statute, the 2004 Adoption Support Act, isn't it? That it, the assessment of need has to be done by a local authority. They have the duty and the responsibility to do that, which is just the way it is, and there's no statute. There's not going to be no change in the statute anytime soon, I guess. Scott, questions?
Yeah, well, probably not. You know, there will be opportunities, I think, going forward to kind of review these kind of changes, and that's what, you know, why I was saying let's hopefully find ways and means of kind of giving people the opportunity to influence the thinking.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I think interestingly, the last few years have seen quite a lot of change in the adoption landscape, and we hear that quite often. I definitely hear that in terms of places I go and people that I speak to. And the last year has seen us hop through three ministers. So we've I'll say hop. We're on. He's not actually a minister, is he? I can't remember his official title, but anyway, the equivalent of a minister now.
Do you mean Nadim Zahawi?
Yes. Yes,
yeah, he's an Under Secretary of State.
Under Secretary of State, okay.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of formal title.
Right, okay. So what are his views?
He is a
on...
minister. Sorry, just to make it clear. Okay. He is a minister. He's a government minister. So he's part of the ministerial team in the Department for Education with responsibility for the whole range of services that they do.
That's probably cleared up for a lot of people as well, actually. So thank you, Alex.
Yeah. And part of his responsibilities includes adoption, and part of his responsibilities includes special guardianship. And so if I could just go back to one of your previous questions about, so how do I and we as a board go about trying to influence and seek change? Well, one of the things is that happens is he asks to see me, I ask to see him, and we meet and have a discussion. So so again, hopefully that will help people understand just exactly what, you know, his role is.
Okay. And what is his, obviously it's his responsibility, but what is his personal kind of interest in adoption and special guardianship, if any? I don't mean personally as in, you know, he, you know, has a personal interest from experience, but, you know, definitely we know some of his background, but what is his kind of vision for adoption and special guardians? Is it similar to the previous two ministers, or is it something else?
Yeah, I'd be careful to speak for him because I'm not his, you know, although I am an appointment of the Secretary of State and answerable to the minister. He and I, you know, have our very separate roles and responsibilities and views. So what I can say to you is he has been very keen to meet with me. The other way he gets involved is he goes out and visits services. So he's been out and visited regional adoption agencies. He's taking a very, very particular interest in the development of regional adoption agencies. He's taking a very particular interest at the moment in recruitment of adopters, because there's an issue that we face at the moment where we're concerned that not enough people are being recruited as adopters. Oh. He's actually, for example, written to all directors of children's services about that. And I don't think, you know, he's written that many letters. If when you're a director of children's services, you get a letter every now and then from the minister. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, you read them and pay some attention to them. So that's indicative. And obviously, ministers don't want to write too often because then that devalues the currency of it. So the fact of the matter is he has written about these particular subjects. Mm-hmm. He's taking a very keen interest in the adoption scorecard, which is a way that performance of local authorities in adoption is measured. Again, he is writing to individual local authorities. So I think you could be confident that he's going to have a different approach from his predecessors. Yeah. And many people listening to this will probably have heard of Edward Timpson in particular, because he was minister for quite a long period of time. And the current minister is relatively new, but he's going to do it differently, and he's going to do it in his own way, in my view. But there is absolutely no thought in my mind that somehow it's an issue that's going to slip off the government agenda. I think it's remained very significant in the thinking of ministers.
Could I be cheeky and ask you then to... Could you pass a message on from us?
Listen to your podcast?
No, don't listen to our podcast.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, friend of the show. I think that adopters, there's a nervousness. I don't know whether you feel this, Scott, but I think there's a nervousness because there has been no sense of what he thinks. There's no tangible way of knowing that, and it was very clear with Edward Timpson. It was very, and I think Robert Goodwin made it clear. But I think there's a nervousness thinking, well, is adoption slipping off the agenda? Is there a focus elsewhere? Because he has spoken on other issues, but not on this issue. So I think that we would. I'm not expecting him to stand in Parliament and make a keynote speech on, you know. But I just think that I don't know how he would do that, but I'm sure he has channels and ways and means. And I think that we would just want to know what he thinks, really.
Well, I certainly will kind of refer to that when I next have a meeting with him.
If he looks cross when you tell him, say it was Scott.
I'll change my surname.
Yeah, I'm being a bit.
No, but I think that's really helpful, actually, for us.
Yeah.
As the hosts of this podcast, but also for others as well who maybe just don't, you know, who just, yeah, he's not as vocal about adoption necessarily than Mr. Timpson was. So yeah, and that, I think that's
well, different. And you've got to remember that. Edward Timpson, of course, had a lot of very personal experience, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was a minister for a very long time.
Yeah.
So whereas I would, you know, say that the new minister is listening and he's thoughtful. And in some ways I'm welcome the fact that, you know, that he is that, because actually perhaps think that's a better approach than sort of rushing in straight away with, you know, expressing
universal kind of approval
about how things ought to be done without perhaps really getting a grip and understanding of the agenda. So that would be my sort of comment on that. Really.
For sure. And let's face it, we all know it takes a good couple of months to settle into a new job, doesn't it? You know, we don't just pick it all up straight away. Yeah.
Where's the coffee machine? That kind of thing.
Exactly. We should have done a show round for him at the DfE.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I have a question that maybe links a little bit to what we've been saying about the Adoption Support Fund, which builds on that. Is one of the questions that we got was someone who felt quite strongly that the Adoption Support Fund had impacted on the core services that their authority were offering, and the Adoption Support Fund had become the answer. Whereas actually there should be a core service. And do you think that there have been instances where people have seen this pot of money and not misused it, but kind of gone, oh, well, we don't have to worry now because we've got this?
I hear the same thing being said about child and adolescent mental health services too. So, and I think there is an issue there.
Right.
I think we would probably rather I'd certainly argue better to have the adoption support fund, because it is a ring fence protected fund, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which in the current kind of times of austerity is a very valuable proposition, because you know local authorities are having to cope with pressure and reductions all around the place, aren't they? So but I do think that's part of the there is a risk that's attached there, and actually I'm not, although it may be experience of some people that they think there's been a diminution of the other services that have been previously provided by local authorities. Actually, when I go around the country, I'm struck by how many local authorities have actually still got a whole set of arrangements of support in place, which are complement the what's available through the Adoption Support Fund. And one of the things actually that I think I think is probably particularly valuable, just using this as an example, is where local authorities have put in place what you could call, I don't mean this pejoratively, but lower level support, where people may be, you know, supporting peer groups, you know, what sometimes people would see as the kind of sort of less specialist kind of point in the range of provision. You know, and that isn't the kind of provision. And I think for many people that's, you know, I know from, you know, my own life experience that actually sitting down with peers and people who've got very similar life experiences, talking about that with somebody there to support and help you do that, actually can be enormously beneficial, and doesn't have to be very expensive and run by all sorts of technical experts, basically. So that's one point. I think the other thing is, though, that absolutely we shouldn't let other agencies off the hook. So one of the things that I'm very keen to pursue further, probably done as much of it as we would like to thus far, is just exactly what the future of child and adolescent mental health services is, for example, as one of the other kind of provisions that some people fear have perhaps been allowed not to, might have been encouraged by the existence of the Adoption Support Fund to not make quite the same range of services available.
Yeah, I think that is a concern for a lot of families, because I'm right in saying you were a social worker when you started your career?
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of people will frequently say that they want that low-level stuff, because that low-level stuff is preventative, and it's often really therapeutic. You know, talking to a good social worker is actually really, really good. So I think that's something that people are quite keen to look at. Thinking about that, one of the elements of the 2020 adoption vision was around workforce development. And I think it is the one topic I very, very rarely hear. I don't think I've ever heard anyone speak about it. I'd be interested to know your thoughts on that, because I don't know about you, Scott, but people will say my social worker doesn't know, my social worker is unable to, and that was a time of austerity as well. So workforce development.
Yeah, well, I think that's a very good point. We probably haven't done enough thinking about that. I mean, it's something that I think goes actually beyond good provision for children who are adopted and their families, and for special guardianship, because actually I think workforce development is something that's crucial for the kind of whole range of social work. And you know, been around in it long enough to been through some times when, to be honest, actually there was very low priority put on workforce issues and workforce development. Some of the training wasn't that good. You know, and as a consequence, I think sometimes the services that were made available really suffer. I guess really probably when people are talking about this, you could divide it into two parts, can't you? Those social workers in the main who work in adoption teams and services, who've got some very kind of particular areas, you know, often have great range of experience and expertise, but I think many would still say they need more help. And one of the things that I think we really need to wrestle with is the whole very complex issue about post order contact arrangements, which is a highly and I'm sure you may have some questions.
We both got excited there.
Yeah, ooh, a little spark of
and you know, that's an area which requires enormous expertise and skills.
Yeah.
So that would be an example of where going forward I'd be really keen that we do find ways and means of helping develop the kind of workforce capability around those areas. The other side of the equation is the is that of the kind of workforce that perhaps is the workforce that works to begin with the children before they are placed in with families. Yeah. And you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, fairly high proportion of that still, unfortunately, is relatively inexperienced, relatively little post-qualifying experience, and probably very little experience and knowledge about the very specific aspects of the requirements of children who are being placed for adoption or indeed through special guardianship arrangements. So that's another area of the workforce where I'm, again, very keen to kind of see kind of progress being made. It's certainly something that I feel very strongly about. I think it's a good challenge, though. We've probably not done enough thinking about that in the leadership world thus far.
Do you feel like we're grilling you? Has this been a...
I'm fine.
Good.
It's your question. No,
show no weakness. Show no weakness. Right.
This is just the preamble. This is...
is it? All right. Okay. But really interesting, actually. Genuinely, because you know, these kind of conversations make me think.
Right.
But I think what's really interesting about workforce development is I don't think that it's just within local authorities actually that have been affected by the kind of austerity measures. I think, right, you know, definitely if you look not just within statutory services but other services as well, you know, it has been affected over the last couple of years, you know, since 2007-08 when you know the kind of financial crisis happened. So I can see that the priority, I mean, this is just my personal view, but I can see why the priority would be put on delivering services that are required rather than necessarily, you know, developing the workforce as a priority. I would get that. And, you know, I think that when you're right in exactly what you're saying, you know, especially with the kind of the social workers that are maybe dealing with the children and preparing them for permanent placements, with whether that's adoption, special guardians, or long-term fostering, I think that they're coming out of their training and post qualifications, you know, they've not got that hands-on experience as yet, and I think it's really difficult to kind of juggle the statutory service that needs to be provided and you know, all the kind of things that we want as parents to be able to provide for our children, whether that's therapy or an assessment actually, or whether, you know, we're, as parents, are we that focused on workforce development? I don't think we are.
But actually, it's a bit of a false economy, I think, because not to invest in the workforce, because actually, if you don't have the right expertise being deployed, then things go wrong. And when things go wrong, you actually end up, amongst other things, apart from causing terrible harm or, you know, real distress or kind of, you know, really damaging children's and families' life chances.
Yeah.
All that, of course, but actually you also end up spending a lot more money as a consequence, basically. So so I'm keen to, and I think most people understand that, but interesting. I mean, as you say, Scott, it will have impacted on third sector organisations. It's not just local authorities, social workers that there haven't been the same opportunities going forward in the future. I do recognise that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, I think we got a couple of points left. I think I'm going to leave one point, which is your husband's point, Scott. That question.
Don't ask that question.
That's the angriest question we had.
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Keep that for the end.
It was the nicest one, actually.
Yeah, it's not. It's a lovely question. And then the other question we had was in relation to, I suppose it links into adopter recruitment, and it's specifically about transracial adoption. And we still maintain this disparity between the ethnicity generally of adopters versus the higher prevalence of Black and ethnic minority children who are waiting to be adopted. And it seems like it's a circle that we're just really struggling to square. So is that something that's on the radar of the leadership board?
Well, there's another one that you've just kind of made me think. Probably we have certainly had conversations about it. And we've certainly looked at the data. And you are right. The data does say that children of Black and ethnic minority background unfortunately tend to wait longer for matches and for placements. And certainly one of the hypotheses that we're working on in that is that because somehow the people involved with the child are looking for a particular kind of match, which if it's difficult to achieve or is never achieved, well, that hardly serves the child well. So it definitely has been on the agenda. You know, the government's issued guidance on this, but I still think, unfortunately, that sometimes practice doesn't quite kind of follow. You know, is behind the curve in some of these areas. Mm-hmm. I think that. So I do think that that is one of the issues. I'd also think actually that probably, yeah, we still got to make more effort to make adoption an attractive proposition or a proposition that people want to consider from a kind of broader range of backgrounds. And I mean, it's one of the issues that I'm concerned about. For example, you know, perhaps one of the parts of the country with the most diverse population is London.
Yeah.
It's one of the areas where actually, sadly, performance in terms of recruitment is weakest. So I think we're missing out some real opportunities. But so I think it's got to be, it's not one or other, it's a mix of those kind of priorities that we need to kind of be much more thoughtful about.
You said that London is weakest. Was that in relation to adopters generally or in relation to Black and ethnic minority adopters?
It's adopters in general. And I'm just saying, if one of the, I mean, there are some very particular issues in London about, you know, housing stock and so on. So, you know, families tend to be, I mean, this is a generalisation, but families tend to be living in much more kind of densely crowded accommodation.
Yeah.
So perhaps just less space for families to consider fostering or adoption, actually, because I think it's quite a problem. But that said, it is the case that if you look at So I'm merely using it as a kind of, if you look at region by region, London is one of the areas, London and the kind of those in London recognise this for themselves, is the one of the areas where A, actually fewest of children are adopted, and also B, fewest adopters are recruited. And I'm just making the point that it is one of the parts of the country where you have the most opportunity to have the most diverse recruitment.
Absolutely,
because of the kind of the resident population. So it's a missed opportunity.
But I know, and I may be wrong, but my history, because I looked into this, because some of my children are Black, but I looked into this and read up about this, but actually historically there was a sense of it being a practice to not match outside of people's ethnicity. And do you think that historically, even though the legislation's been changed, then it was changed again and made it explicit that you're not to look, which I could, you know, we could argue about why that was changed. But do you think that even though that there's no reason on paper that there still is a culture and amongst perhaps some social work teams?
I think there is.
Right.
I do. I absolutely do think, unfortunately, there's still a a discomfort about it in some areas of kind of practice. And I think that's really unfortunate, because actually I think that's to the disadvantage of the life chances of the black and ethnic minority children that we're talking about.
Yeah. Because white adopters are overrepresented and black and ethnic minority children are underrepresented. You have to kind of cross that bridge sooner or later, don't we?
Yeah, you do, absolutely. So, and you've got to make a choice, haven't you? So do you deny a black child the opportunity for, an adoptive family on the basis of it? And I don't think that's necessarily the right thing to be doing.
Do you think that then perhaps speaks into our, which is, a huge subject, which is around preparation? That actually, because I know that, and hopefully my social worker doesn't listen to this, but I know that the questions that I was asked when I was being assessed to adopt black children, the level of cultural competence was laughable. And because of where I was, I didn't know any difference. So, it was really simplistic about in relation to ethnicity, around culture, which are two different things. So, and I think that links back to workforce development, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does. And the reality is these are immensely complicated issues, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, sometimes, sadly, I think when you've got very complicated issues, sort of in practice, the practice sort of tries to boil it down to a few basic essentials, which actually then when you stand back and look at them, you then realise that they are facile.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
No, I mean, I live in a rural community near the sea, and the culture of my daughter's family is northern working class sea town. That's their culture, but that's not their ethnicity. So my children, if they'd remained with their birth family, would have been brought up as white northern. So it's very nuanced, and I think that it's easy to boil it down to. That, we should be listening to Bob Marley and eating plantain every Sunday morning.
Yeah. Which I would call is facile.
Yes. Scott, you've got that. This is it. This is the.
Yeah, this is your last one, Andrew, and you've done so well to keep up with us.
What I've been calling this question is Scott's career breaker.
Well, my career or Scott's career?
Scott's.
Not yours. I think yours is well established. So
no, I'm the bottom of it. You're in the middle of yours, so you've got more to lose.
I'm still very, very early on in terms of my career.
Choose your words carefully, Scott.
Yeah, I was just thinking that actually, because that makes me sound like I'm only 20. Obviously, I'm not. Anyway, so education, obviously, and you know this because I've sat in meetings where people have banged their fist on the table and talked about education. But you talked here briefly about CAMH or CAMS. Sorry, I keep calling them CAMH. And the relation to adoption through CAMS. But there's this education piece that we're ongoing with now. So the question is, what about the lack of cohesion between the education system and looked after children, / post looked after children? What has been done about it? This is consistently raised as an issue. The number one stress point, actually, for most adoptive families, in terms of their placements, and there's lots of mixed messages currently, obviously, with the virtual schools, because obviously their remit has been extended and stuff. But I guess the question is, the lack of cohesion, and what can we do to kind of close that gap and make it better for families, because it is that one stress point, isn't it? Sometimes.
Absolutely, and I recognise the significance of this, because A, it's a point of huge stress. It's also potentially, if there are real difficulties. And of course, it's also absolutely crucial to outcomes for children concerned, isn't it? To have a good experience of education and schooling is absolutely vital for any child. And even more important for children who perhaps have got other kind of issues that they are having to overcome. I mean, the one thing is I would say is at least we're having this conversation. And we're recognising it as an issue, and it is recognised nationally as an issue. And whatever the ambiguities of the new arrangements of the role of the virtual school head are, and uncertainties, that actually the fact of the matter is this is a provision and arrangement that is coming on stream. It'll take time to have an effect, which I think ought to make a difference for adopted children and for children in special guardianship arrangements, because I saw the impact it had as a in children's services when the role was first introduced for children in care. And it, you know, where it, of course it isn't a panacea and it doesn't, you know, resolve all issues, but it did make a big difference for a lot of children. And so, you know, some of that research which has shown that actually the educational attainment of kids who are in care for a period of time actually is better, they do better than the children who are living in similar circumstances to those they came from who remain in those circumstances. And I think that is an absolute product of the work, partly of the work, the difference that was made by arrangements like the virtual school head. So I really don't think we should underestimate. Of course, it's very early days. And, you know, absolutely rightly, everybody's saying, but are there the resources in place? Well, actually, more money is now being put into it because of that challenge to make sure that there is more capacity in the system. So I do think that will begin to make a – that's one way we can make a difference. I think the other way of making a difference is – for us to make common cause around about the issues of a whole range of children from in different circumstances who are, however, have fairly similar needs, to make common cause with what I'm going to call very generally the school community. So those schools where the schools are beginning to realize that actually they might have a few, you know, only a handful of adopted children, a handful of children in care, a handful of children with other needs. But if you put all those children together, you're beginning to have a significant, a reasonably significant group of children that the school needs to kind of pay attention to the needs of. And then if we find ways and means of actually helping the school become more, just supporting the school develop the kind of their range of expertise around about the kind of needs that these children have, then I think that is another way which we can bring about kind of change and improve chances for adopted children. So and again, it's another you know, it ought to be something that we see as worth doing, obviously for the sake of the children that we're talking about. But actually, again, if you can get those, begin to get those things right and begin to make kind of changes and make it more likely that children will be able to remain at one particular school and flourish at that school, rather than, you know, getting bounced through the education system, through, you know, all sorts of different types of provision, you know, that actually is better for the system as well as for the children concerned.
It's really interesting. I mean, it's a conversation I have day in, day out, and I'm sure you're the same, Al, in terms of education. It was interesting today because I read something on Twitter. I think it was Lisa Cherry, who does a lot of training around education, and she was, she was adopted herself. But she said, this is here for good. This trauma-informed approach, you know, adverse childhood experiences, all that sort of stuff, it's not going anywhere, and we need to get this, you know, because I appreciate all the stuff that, you know, has been changed recently with the Children's Social Work Act and, you know, virtual schools, etc. But this does come within the school communities, doesn't it? because we need to... You know, we need schools to accept that this is a thing that's not going to go away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that point about adverse childhood experiences, interestingly, you know, one of the other things I currently do at the moment is I chair the safeguarding board in, happens to be in Lambeth. And there, only today, we were talking about a conference for practitioners, which will include school staff, around about the impact of adverse childhood experience. And that wasn't the impact of those experiences on adopted children. It was actually the impact on a whole range of children. So that's what I mean about the kind of common cause, really.
And I think it's interesting that, you know, we have this access point to be able to inform. And I think that, you know, definitely when I'm out and about, I talk more about children who are vulnerable rather than adopted children. Because, you know, we know that, you know, roughly 60% of school children have had two or more adverse childhood experiences, with separation and divorce and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it's not uncommon. Anyway, sorry, I kind of diverted off.
No, I think that's a really important point that we all need to make. And in a sense, oddly, I think it's a bit, there's a parallel with going right back to the beginning where we were talking about why did we broaden the remit of the board to include children who have made the subject of a special guardianship order arrangement. And actually, one of the reasons for doing that actually is it isn't necessarily helpful in the best interest to just concentrate on one kind of particular group, to adopted children, because then somehow, you know, then actually there's a view that maybe some others have that somehow, you know, this is a kind of sort of special group that's getting a kind of particular treatment. They are a special group that do need special provision. But actually, if we could then put some of that provision alongside provision for other children, then people actually feel more comfortable about that. And I think it could, therefore, we're more likely to get a helpful response.
Yeah, that's very true. I'm aware that we've taken up a whole hour of your evening, so I've got lots more questions. But maybe would you come back on for us perhaps in a few months? And I can ask you about your future plans.
Yeah, I'd be very keen to, and I'd be really interested to know what the kind of response is to. I'm sure it'll be very mixed to some things that I've said, you know, these are very difficult issues we're talking about.
Yeah, well, I think it would be interesting to get you on in a couple of months once we see kind of some of the changes with virtual schools and stuff like that as well, so we can kind of have a chat about that. So that'd be really good as well.
Well, now I'm a seasoned...
You are.
Podcast. I have done one.
I wasn't here the first one you did, but we're now going to call you Andrew Christie, friend of the show.
Oh, is that right? Is that what happened?
We should start giving out badges, shouldn't we?
We should. Blue Peter badges.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we've got some kind of awards sitting places that, you know. So yeah, you get a little name pin badge. We'll get you a pin badge for next time when we meet you. Yeah.
That'll be good.
Yes, Al's got two. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. I know. I've been there when you've been getting some of those awards. Oh, so I know how successful you are, basically. So.
Oh, has he invited you to his MBE? No.
No. Well, have you actually got a date now?
Yeah, I go on the 1st of June, and I'm taking almost all of my children, which is quite kind of the...
You managed to get tickets for all of them, did you?
All of those that are...
It's either that or Prince William was babysitting, so one of the two. You know.
No, there's a couple of them that can't come. I say can't, shouldn't come. So there's a fine line, unless you want to say a domestic incident, an international incident. But yeah, looking forward to it. It should be a bright blast. And my mother's coming, which is the most important person of all, really.
Super. Yeah, well, yeah, I hope you have a great day. It's a terrific occasion.
Thank you. I don't know how we got onto me. How did we end up on me? Anyway,
we're talking about awards.
Okay.
And you've got so many.
Yeah, I'll have to cut this out. This is terrible.
Yeah. No, you won't. You'll leave this in. Thank you very much.
I will. And as always, I know that, Andrew, you've always been very kind and given us a route to get direct contact to you. And we've got an email address that we've given out in the past, which is through the CVAA. So we'll put that out and we'll attach it to the podcast because I know that you do want to know what people think, and you would.
I really do. Yeah. Absolutely.
You should do some open forum events. I'll arrange that for you. I'll send you some emails. I'm just joking.
I'm up for also having the opportunity to go out and meet people. So, you know, I'm serious about that as well. So,
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a fantastic evening and everything goes well.
Yeah. Thanks for your time, both of you. Thank you for taking the time. So, speak soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Andrew. So tell me, what did you think?
I feel like you were a bit Jeremy Paxman, actually.
I don't. I think we were. I think that the people who gave us
questions. I think we were quite kind, actually. Yeah. I mean, the interesting, and this is just to kind of reflect on that a little bit. It is when. You know, we want to get these people back onto the podcast, so we don't want to alienate them by asking them really, you know, Paxman-style-y questions. So we do have to think about how we ask them. And, you know, some of the, you know, I've got this piece of paper in front of me, which has the actual direct questions from Facebook and Twitter. And they're quite direct, some of them.
Which is really reasonable. Are. Why not? He's a public official.
You know, and let's face it, you know, you and I both know that, you know, our experience of adoption sometimes is quite difficult. Mm. But, you know, I guess that's part of the reason why we do the podcast, is so that we can kind of, you know, ask questions, but in a softer way. Softer? Is that the right word?
Well, I think it's who we are as well. We're both relational people, aren't we? We think that we'll get more out of people if they're our friends.
Very needy.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it. Very needy.
Yeah, we are, aren't we?
Yeah.
We are. Very. To love and attention of everybody. But I think that, to be fair, he was equally quite challenging in some of his kind of, you know, throwbacks, because he's right in some of the stuff that he was saying. Yeah. But I did like the fact that I did see him writing stuff down when we were asking him. And some points. So, you know, when you said about the minister and maybe he needs to say something about adoption and special guardians to, you know.
Yeah.
To show us on his agenda. I saw Andrew writing that down. And I know from having been in meetings with Andrew previously, when he writes something down, it generally does happen.
Well, that's encouraging. And I think that we are in a dialogue that we don't, you know, there's a power dynamic as well, because we've got something to lose. If we're being really honest, we could lose access to Andrew.
Yeah,
if we call him an idiot and say, why the hell aren't you doing this, that, the other, then he'll go, well, I'm not talking to them two pillocks again. So, So we're a total washout, just self-serving, and it's all to maintain our status as the adopter elite.
Oh, okay. Right, you went there.
Right. Ooh. Well, I will. And I'll tell you why, because it was maybe 2 years ago that we had got into a Twitter conversation with someone who accused us of being... What did they accuse us of being?
Adopter elite.
Yeah. And we both took on... It's true.
Well, it wasn't just us that was accused of being it, actually. There was a group of us. And I think that the reason for that was because we had access. But the reason we have access, dear listeners, is because
How presumptuous. Because,
yeah. Dear listener. Claire,
mother.
Claire Nails.
Mother.
Claire Nails listens to everything she does. But, you know, we've got that access. And in all seriousness, our delivery of some of these questions, you know, that's how we do it. There's different types of people in this world, and we are that, you know, that's...
Yeah,
it's probably where we compliment each other, but anyway, that's the sideline. But I just thought it was really interesting. We brought up some things that actually he hadn't considered. So, workforce development.
Thank you.
You know, yeah, pat on the back for you for that, because actually it's right. And I think it's right that, you know, it's not just affecting local authorities, it is affecting the third sector as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, transracial adoption and black and.
Which is it's an issue that I think is really interesting, because I've raised it in meetings before, and we know, not in a bad sense, like, yes, we know, but there's a lack of answers. So I think that the person who asked me that question, I think that, you know, it's right that that drum is kept banging. Someone needs to bang that drum. It's on my list of things to do.
No doubt. It's a long list.
It is a long list.
So that was Andrew Christie. So,
I'd be interested to see what people think, because I think people may go, they might go, oh, well, he was just a politician or whatever. But anyway. I think there was a couple of things that podcast housekeeping.
There's no fire alarm planned, however.
Yeah, don't feed the animals. The one is that, thank you very much for everyone who did my little survey on Twitter. It was my first ever Twitter survey. Felt like a big boy. Finally reached the social media age.
Which one?
The one, the little poll.
Is that the first time you've done one?
That's the first time.
Oh my days, you need to go out more. I'm fabulous. I love doing them.
That's so last year, isn't it? And so I asked, what do people want to see more of? And one was, do they want to see adoptee...
You want to see anything.
All right, here, adoptee conversation stories. specialists, you know, and experts in their fields, people like Beth Neal, who we've got on hopefully the next podcast, or conversations on topics. And the winner was conversations on topics. So that's what we'll do then.
Yeah.
That's that. That was a great. Wow, that, you know, what insight. Yeah. That's what people listen for, isn't it? My insight and pithy, witty things.
Okay. But, and I think that interestingly, one thing that I'm always very conscious of is that we call ourselves the Adoption and Fostering Podcast.
Oh, I know.
And we could go all out and say, you know, Adoption, Special Guardian and Fostering Podcast.
Shut the front door.
I know, but we won't, because that would just be such a mouthful. And what is in a name? What is in a name? You know.
Oh, don't get me started.
Yeah, but I would like us to consider, you know, how we approach that as well, because, you know, we talk to Suddenly Mummy quite a lot.
Yes.
Friend of the show. And, you know, we need to get her back on very shortly. But also we need to, you know, find a friend of the show who's special guardian, who can support, you know, some of our listeners in terms of what they're experiencing as well.
That'd be good.
I think that our development of the podcast will go on. And also, if McVitie's are listening, which I'm sure they must be, because they must listen. Yeah, or Foxes. We would like to be sponsored by Bourbons, please. Yeah. Or if Jacob's Creek is listening, they do a nice little Chardonnay.
This episode was brought to you by
McVitie's Bourbons
and Gin and Tonic. Gordon's Gin. The Adopter's Friend.
I tell you what, you're not wrong. The amount of stuff I've seen on Twitter this last couple of weeks, I mean, I've not been engaged on Twitter because I've just not felt it this last couple of weeks. But yes, there's been a lot of talk about gin and wine and all that sort of stuff.
Gordon's Gin, The Adopter's Friend.
Yeah, I know.
One thing, thank you for everyone who gave us more reviews on the iTunes. Do it again, because it's just funny, but please make them funny. I'm all for comedy. Give us however many stars you want, but say something funny.
People say things on iTunes?
Yeah, go on to iTunes. There's all kinds of things.
No.
Yes, man. Well,
people actually, oh, God, dare I?
No, yes, really? Do. It's nice. But anyway, did you see, we also got a comment about your accent.
No, it was your accent, not mine.
It wasn't. It was. We said they had to listen to the podcast twice because they couldn't.
No, that was yours. That wasn't mine. It was not. You liar. Was not. It was you liar. It was an American woman.
Had a way, man. What the hell?
Listen to it six times just to understand what our course was saying, yeah?
Well, I said to the bends, you're up the clout, man. What the hell are you doing? Get yourselves up to bed or your mother will clout you.
See, I understood every word of that.
Did you?
Then nothing. I'm from Scotland, so it's very similar. It's just the accents are slightly different.
Yeah.
Because I know what a clout is, I tell you.
Yeah, I bet you
Sure, you mentioned your social worker. You hope she's not listening? Yeah, I hope not as well. Yeah. If you're clouting your bairns.
I'm not. I said that your mother will clout you. It was a hypothetical situation.
But interestingly, that Americans listen to this. So welcome, because Americans are my favourite people outside of Great Britain.
Great, get in. That's really good to know. I'm so pleased you've shared that with the group. The other thing I was going to say is, the one thing in the Twitter poll, back to the Twitter poll, which I was talking about before you so rudely interrupted me, was...
comment on the podcast.
The one thing I've always been slightly nervous about doing is adopter stories. Because... Adopter. I'm really up for adoptee stories. I think they're really helpful, but stories.
Okay.
And I don't know, what do you think about that? Well, having adopters on telling their adopter stories.
Well, I guess for me, it depends on what the story is, because there's so many different stories, isn't there? And there's that risk of, I guess it's a security risk, actually, more than anything, in terms of sharing too much. However, we have had, you know, people like Hannah Meadows on, and
Daniel, and awkward silence. We've not had many people come on tell their stories.
We haven't. I guess that's a question to our listeners.
To Glitter Nails.
Yeah, Glitter Nails. Can you send me a text? Yeah. Let me know
what you think.
But I guess what you've always done so well with the topics that we cover is it's a specific topic. So, you know, if you're looking, and I guess, you know, if you think about LGBT adoption and fostering week, that was quite specific, wasn't it? That was about LGBT fostering and adoption. So I guess it needs to be quite specific in terms of a topic. So, you know, if someone's adopted from overseas or someone has, you know, like when we spoke to Daniela Shanley, actually, you know, education, massive thing with Beach Lodge, as you know, how that's progressed and how that's developed and how successful that's been as a fantastic education, you know, resource for people in that area. So it's things like that.
What do you think about overseas adoption? Sorry to cut across that. Shall I not draw you onto those rocks?
Please don't, because that's something that, not today, Josephine. No,
it's late, isn't it? What time is it? Oh, it's nearly 11 o'clock.
But it's not just about that. That is a whole,
We should do a podcast on it, because I think a lot of people have a lot of questions.
Yeah, and actually, we should.
I've got a friend who would be up for that, maybe.
Yeah. Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. But stuff like that I think that, you know,
link it to topics.
It needs to be linked to a topic rather than just a general kind of chat with the doctors. Because everybody has such a unique journey. So and one thing that I would really like to hear about is this would be quite tricky and difficult, but I think in terms of parenting from a distance, I would love to talk to somebody who has experience of that, to be able to, you know, kind of validate the journey that some of our peers go through, because, you know, that is a really tricky one, and it's something that I am so aware of. The numbers are reasonably small in the general kind of numbers of adoption, but actually it's definitely something that happens. We know it happens, and we need that story out there.
Let's do that then.
There you go.
Cool.
I know exactly the person as well. So
do you? Excellent. I'll let you speak. I'll let you get in touch with them. I think that we've another great show, Steve.
Who am I?
You're Steve Wright.
Steve?
Yeah,
Steve?
You can be Steve Wright. Cool. So I think if people could put a review on iTunes, tell your friend. Do you know what I've... This is where we go a bit off piece here. But I listen to podcasts, and I listen to adoptee adoption podcasts. I don't listen to a lot because I'd go mad if I just listened to... But what I've noticed is they're really professional. And
what are you saying?
I think you know what I'm saying. So, our intro... we should have an intro that says, "Hi, my name's Al Coates, and welcome to the Fostering and Adoption podcast."
Well, I've already said this to you. We need someone to sing our intro.
Yeah. You're listening to the Fostering and Adoption and Fostering podcast.
It shouldn't be us that says it.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah, with some really soothing music, but ours is just like two men being silly.
I wonder if Sally Donovan would do that, actually.
Should we ask her?
She'd be great. Yes, let's ask Sally D. Sally D would be the... Because she's got that voice, hasn't she? She's got that therapeutic voice that makes you just want to go...
Oh, we could do that. We could get them to... We'll get Suddenly Mummy to do a trail for us. But Bayek is like, thou should listen.
Hey, Michael.
Thou should listen to podcast.
And then, depending on who introduces us, depends on how our mood was when we recorded it. Yeah, exactly. We should have. But then, do you know what? You say that a lot of these American ones, whether you like to listen to them or not, they are actually sponsored in one way, shape, or form.
They use Patreon, don't they? Which is like a subscription, paid subscription, which I don't want to do. Anyway,
we want to keep this free.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Tonight's podcast was brought to you by Cheese on Toast and Chardonnay, the adopter's friend.
Highland Spring and Squash.
Highland Spring. Excellent. Nice to see you saying, look, we are now just rambling. So, yeah whatever. I hope you're having a good day and a good week, and I'm sure you'll be busy. So look after yourself.
Yeah. And you.
Okay.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye. So professional. Bye.
Bye. Make it stop. Please. Make it stop.
I use a bit. Hello and welcome. Hello. Hello. I got very high when I was saying hello.
Hello.
It must have been my week in Ireland. It's turned me off to be hello. Welcome to the adoption.
Start again.
And fostering.
Start again. Oh, you sounded like Paul Daniels on That's Magic.
You can be my Debbie McGee.
Yeah, I look lovely. I've got lovely legs.
I don't need to know. Hello. That's worse. Go on the opposite. Right, anyway, bear with me.
Hello.